Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 30th of September, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll get the details on tonight's Soberfest with Michelle Federico from Gastineau Human Services and Terry Tibbett. Filmmaker Steve Dunsky and Regional Forester Beth Pendleton will be here to give us a preview of their evening meeting and presentation tonight on conservationist Aldo Leopold. We'll also be taking a trip to Circus Polynesia. That Writer's Almanac Music and more today at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain showers likely, low temperatures around 40 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and high temperatures around 49 degrees. Forecast for Sunday looks like sunny weather, there is a frost and patchy fog early.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. At a U.S. State Department hearing in Pierre, South Dakota Thursday, Native people spoke out against the Keystone XL pipeline project. The State Department is considering whether to issue a permit for the project that would carry oil from Canadian tar sands to Gulf Coast refineries. Victoria Wicks reports.
Many of the proponents of the Keystone XL pipeline hope for jobs, increased tax revenues, and money pumped into local economies. For opponents, the arguments come down to water versus oil and money versus environment. Pat Spears appeared on behalf of the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy. Spears says he opposes the pipeline for environmental reasons, but also for empathetic reasons.
We also stand in solidarity with our relatives to the north in Canada, the Cree Nations and the Dene Nations, who are directly impacted by the mining of tar sands.
Deborah Whiteplume is an environmental activist from the Pine Ridge Reservation.
No government in the world should force their people to choose between jobs and a clean environment.
Whiteplume says she's concerned about the availability of water for future generations.
With the 50,000 Oglala Lakota people, if we're deprived of drinking water, that's genocide for our people.
The pipeline is planned to run across the Oglala Aquifer, a concern for tribal president Rodney Bordeaux.
You know, based upon our constitution, the Rosebud Sioux Tribe's constitution, we have to look forward to the next seven generations and the decisions we make today, how they'll impact the next seven generations. So, in doing so, you know, we cannot support this.
Bordeaux says tribes weren't consulted about potential damage to cultural, historical, and burial sites when the State Department put together its environmental impact statement released in August. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Pierre, South Dakota.
The U.S. Department of Justice recently awarded grants to tribes across the country to improve services, including public safety, courts, and youth programs. Eilish O'Neill reports on how two Northwest tribes plan to use their funds.
The Tulalip Tribal Court is using its grant of $500,000 to hire a new legal assistant and part-time prosecutor and to get a new case management system. Teresa Pauly, the chief judge of the Tulalip Tribes, says that the new hires will enable the court to better address the underlying problems that bring people to court in the first place. Pauly says that the new legal assistant and prosecutor will have more time to review police reports, negotiate with defense attorneys, and make better charging decisions.
Your ability to be able to give quick attention to somebody who has been recently found to be allegedly in violation of the law makes a huge difference in terms of identifying services that might be appropriate.
Daryl Hilaire is the program manager at the Lummi Youth Academy. The Lummi Nation received grants to help improve its youth programs, but Hilaire is skeptical about this outside assistance.
We should be driven by what our long-term plan is, our long-term, you know, hopes are for our people. We shouldn't kneel at the, you know, at the doorsteps of these funding agencies and say, yes, we will follow your rules and, you know, we'll adopt your outcomes for our people. And they should try to integrate into what we're trying to do, you know.
The Lummi Nation received funding for equipment, training, and hiring, as well as for youth programs, and the Tulalip Tribe received grants for domestic violence programs, as well as for its court. The Justice Department grants to tribes around the country totaled about $120 million. For National Native News, I'm Eilish O'Neill in Seattle, Washington.
During this week in 1962, the first issue of the Tundra Times was published in Alaska. The weekly newspaper was the first statewide vehicle for Alaska Native people to communicate about their issues like land claims. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are here to talk about Soberfest, which is happening tonight from 6:30 till 11 at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Michelle Federico from Gastineau Human Services and Terry Tibbett, one of the organizers of the event. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Hey, thanks, Jeff.
So, Michelle, could you tell me what Gastineau Human Services is and what does their mission, perhaps the number of clients you have?
Gastineau Human Services is a private nonprofit organization that was set up a number of years ago to assist folks that whose lives are affected by substance abuse and whose families are affected by substance abuse in one form or another. Generally, the clients that are housed on the campus are also incarcerated, so they're technically inmates of one or another facility in the state. But the outpatient treatment services that we provide for substance abuse specifically are for anyone in the community who needs outpatient treatment services. We have about 85 people on the campus at any given time. We also provide transitional living services to folks that are basically homeless. And there's no special requirements for the participation in that program. And at any given time, we have 60 to 75 people in our treatment program. And we serve about 285 people a year in our substance abuse treatment program, I do believe.
How is it funded?
It's funded in part through the Department of Corrections for the rehabilitational part of our program. And the Department of Behavioral Health funds the outpatient treatment services, some client fees, some city grants, United Way.
How do you work on solving the recovery process, or not solving the recovery process, but how do you help the process in general?
Well, number one, we don't give up. We deal with folks that have whose lives have been severely affected by substance abuse and whose families have been, in most cases, devastated by it. Folks that are incarcerated have lost a whole lot or maybe never even had anything to start with that was meaningful. So, number one, we don't give up. And number two, we don't deny services to anyone who needs the help. And we try to get folks in as soon as possible. We get them to the right level of care if we're not the most correct place for them. And we try to get people into treatment as soon as possible. The trouble is there's a high rate of relapse and recidivism in substance abuse and also with folks with criminal backgrounds. So oftentimes people will relapse and it looks to an outsider as if it's a failure, but it's something that you really need a microscope to evaluate and not, you really need to look at the small incremental successes and steps towards success. What we do try to do in almost every case is connect people to the community, the 12-step support groups in the community that will help be that safety net for folks when they're out of the system or out of treatment.
So these are some of the things that work. What doesn't work at all?
Giving up doesn't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that don't work is putting people in the wrong place at the wrong time. So, I mean, they really, really need to have a good evaluation. They need to have support whether it's from family or friends. It depends on how much devastation's been done to their loved ones. So we want to just provide people with the right direction to the services that they need.
We're here talking about the Soberfest, which is happening tonight from 6:30 till 11 at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. the coroner of Egan and Whittier, Terry Tibbett. Can you give me an overview of the event, please?
Well, first at 4 o'clock, the Zach Gordon Youth Center is sponsoring a Soberfest family pre-party, and that invites people to come from anybody can go to that, and it's just across the parking lot from the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, and they're going to offer pool tournaments and ping pong tournaments and free climbing wall, free basketball, racquetball. It's just lots of fun things to do at Zach Gordon Youth Center. That's from 4 to 7. And then at 6:30, people can walk right across the parking lot to the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, or the Jack, as we know it, friendlily, but that's not a word. So anyway, the point is that they can walk across the parking lot to the Jack, and then starting at 6:30, we're going to have pizza for sale. Pizza for sale and also some drinks, non-alcoholic beverages. And then at 7 o'clock, Rick Haglin is going to start performing. He's a singer-songwriter, and he's going to sing songs that are inspired by the process of recovery. 7:30, we start with the Addiction and Mental Health Professionals Awards, and we're honoring 5 different people in the community who work in the field of mental health, or substance abuse treatment. And that happens from 7:30 to 8. Excuse me. And then at 8 o'clock, we're going to have Kari Groven and the Wrist Rockets. That's a live band. They're going to play music. They'll be dancing and live music, hula hooping and pizza. And non-alcoholic beverages will be available until 10:30. And the whole event ends at 11.
Who is it for? Do you have to be in the process of recovery to attend?
Yeah. Say that again.
You don't have to be in the process of recovery.
No, you don't have to be in the process of recovery to attend, exactly. But if you want to know, one thing that's really people might be interested to know is there will be tables, information tables, exhibit tables from all the different local providers in town who provide mental health and substance abuse services, so you can come pick up brochures, you can just see what's available. It's very anonymous, you don't have to, sign anything, it's free, you can walk in and just look around and participate in the party. It's supposed to be mostly a party.
A sober party.
Yeah, a sober party, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And this is the second one, at least?
This is the third one.
The third one.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of reactions did you get from the first two?
Really good. Yeah. It was fewer people the first year, mm-hmm. few more people the second year. We had a good turnout last year, and we're expecting a bigger turnout this year.
That's happening at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center next door here to KTUO. If you need any more information, how can they find out?
They can call 465-4765. That's an information number. Or they can, I think that would be the best course.
They can call 780-3044 until 5 tonight.
Yep. And then another thing, it's tonight at, just letting people know who tuned in late. It's the Soberfest is tonight at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
Which is next door to KTUO, and we're apparently with the two.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right, Michelle Federico and Terry Tibbett, is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thanks.
We're good. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, here's the kind of party that's the opposite of the Soberfest. We'll be right back. your dog Knight. It was 3:16 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Steve Dunsky, who's a U.S. Forest Service filmmaker. Also Pep Pendleton, she's the Alaska Regional Forester. We're here to talk about the film Green Fire, which is being shown at the University of Alaska Southeast evening and in presentation tonight at 7 o'clock in the Egan Lecture Hall. Steve and Beth, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Great. It's great to be here.
So first of all, who was Aldo Leopold and why was he important, Steve?
Aldo Leopold is a conservationist. He started out working for the Forest Service in 1909, having graduated from Yale Forest School, which was set up by Gifford Pinchot, the first chief of the Forest Service. And so as a young forest ranger, his job was to manage the Apache National Forest and the grazing and things that were happening there. But as he started to look around and see all the damage that was happening to the land because of overgrazing and things, his ideas about land management started to change. And by the 1930s and 1940s, he had become one of the most sophisticated thinkers about conservation ideas. And those ultimately expressed themselves in a book called The Sand County Almanac.
Can you tell me about that, please?
Sand County Almanac was published the year after Aldo Leopold died. He actually found out that it was going to be published 8 days before he died. And when it was first published, it was not widely read. But in the 1960s, with the emergence of the environmental movement, it just took off and became, for many people, the sort of Bible of the environmental movement.
And the film Green Fire is going to be shown tonight at 7 o'clock at the University of Alaska Southeast Egan Lecture Hall. Green Fire, the title, where did that come from?
Well, that's a great question. It actually comes from a story that Leopold wrote in 1944 called Thinking Like a Mountain. It's actually an essay. And in that story, he describes how he shot a wolf in 1909. And he saw this fierce green fire in the eyes of the dying wolf. And it's kind of a metaphor for him of our relationship with the natural world. 35 years later, thinking about this incident, he realized that there was much more to our relationship with nature than just eliminating predators. And so it became kind of a metaphor in a way for his transformation.
Was conservation a popular concept in the early days?
It was controversial then, and it's controversial now, I mean, in different ways. But conservation during the Progressive Era, when Leopold started in the Gifford Pinchot era, it was all about trying to stop a lot of the resource exploitation that was going on all around the country. We were losing all the forests at that time. And it was very controversial, but it stays controversial today.
How did he handle it back then?
With a gun, mostly. Forest rangers in those days were the law enforcement people. They would go out and they would try to stop people from abusing the land, and they would literally ride around on horseback and have a gun and a badge and try to enforce the regulations on the public lands.
What inspired you to do the film?
Well, I've worked for the Forest Service for about 20 years, and when I started with the Forest Service in 1989, the Forest Service was going through this enormous change, and not everybody really recognized it at the time, but it was this change from what we call multiple use management to ecosystem management. And it's taken about 20 years for that change to happen. But that change was largely inspired by Aldo Leopold, and I really wanted to tell that story.
Tell me about the process of making the film itself.
It was about a 3-year process, start to finish, and
you and your wife worked on it?
I was the sort of writer on the film, and my wife's the editor. I always say that I kind of create the mess, and she cleans it up. It's kind of a big sprawling mess of footage that she has to deal with, and she's the sort of genius that figures out how to put it all together.
Where did the footage come from? Was it all original footage, or did you get a lot of file footage?
It's mostly original. We did get some archival footage from a public television station. I'll put in a plug for them in Seattle, but most of it's original footage.
Took you 3 years to make the film?
Yep.
What did you take out that you really wanted to leave in, but you had to cut out because of time essence?
We have a narrator named Kurt Miney. He's kind of the narrator guy, and he's also Leopold's biographer. And we shot these what we called rants with Kurt, where he would sort of go off on a topic and sort of kind of tell you what he really thought about some things. And I would have liked to have left them in, but they just weren't quite appropriate for the story.
Do you have any footage of Leopold himself?
There's about 17 seconds. The only known footage of Leopold is in the film, and it's about 17 seconds worth.
How has Leopold inspired you?
My wife and I have inherited a farm in Connecticut, and we've often thought about going back there when we retire, and we thought about how could we make a living on that farm. But I think working and thinking about Leopold all these years, it's really caused us to think about what can we do for the land rather than what the land can do for us.
I should ask you, has Leopold inspired your work at all?
Absolutely. 30 years ago, I was a student in wildlife biology and forestry at the University of Vermont. It was the first time that I read a Sand County Almanac and also another more of an academic text that Leopold wrote called Game Management, which both of these books were an integral part of our curriculum as a wildlife student. And, you know, I was really touched by the simplicity of the writing, yet the very complex themes that he described. And I think the thing that really struck me most is really the relationship of people to people and also people to the land. And now, 30 years later, most of that career with the Forest Service, still dealing with those same issues of how people work together, communicate around some really tough issues around land management and how we work together to ensure healthy forests, resilient forests, as well as healthy communities locally.
The film is 73 minutes long, and there'll be a period of time for questions and answers following the film?
Yes, there will be. Steve is going to, you know, share a little bit about the makings of the film. We're going to show the film tonight, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about how the themes in the documentary apply to some of our contemporary management issues here in Alaska, and then there'll be plenty of time for questions.
Steve, this is not the first time the film has been shown, is it?
No, it premiered in Albuquerque back in February, and since then it's shown over 500 times around the country.
And have you accompanied it for a lot of those times?
Just a handful. Don't get to travel to all of them, but we're very fortunate because we have lots of partners in the project, the Alto Leopold Foundation and the Center for Humans and Nature, and there's a lot of Leopoldians tucked away in different corners of the country, and they help us out a lot with these screenings.
What's the most common question people ask you when they're after the film?
Oh, boy. I think one of the questions that comes up, and quite honestly, I don't have a good answer for it, is how does Leopold's land ethic relate to a Native American or indigenous land ethic? In other words, the people that were here before Europeans had a land ethic that in some ways is similar to what Leopold is proposing. And Leopold was very much of his time in a way. He had a Eurocentric view of the land. And so one of the things that's interesting now is to see how this idea of a land ethic that Leopold proposed works in parallel or together with some of the ideas in indigenous communities.
Could you please expand on the term land ethic?
Leopold wanted us to extend our idea of ethics beyond the human community to the larger biotic community. And so one of the ways in which he phrased that was that a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, beauty, and stability of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise.
Film is showing tonight at 7 o'clock at the Egan Lectural at the University of Southeast Alaska. And it's 7 o'clock and it's free. Aldo Leopold and the Land Ethic for Our Time. Tell me about the foundation, the Aldo Leopold Foundation, what it's up to now.
Yeah, the Aldo Leopold Foundation is in Baraboo, Wisconsin, which is where Leopold's famous shack is located. It's the only outhouse that I know of that's on the National Register of Historic Places. I'm sorry, it's not an outhouse. It's a chicken. I misspoke. It's a chicken coop.
You can call it an outhouse.
Leopold did have an outhouse. It was called the Parthenon. That was what they called their outhouse. But anyway, it's a chicken coop. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. It's where Aldo Leopold and his family spent their weekends, not only restoring the shack itself, but restoring the land to health. And the foundation is right down the road. They built a building there that for a while was the greenest building in the world, LEED certified platinum. And they manage Leopold's literary estate and also foster his ideas about the land ethic, both in practical terms on the ground and also by producing products like this movie.
Was he a prolific writer?
Leopold was a very prolific writer, and he wrote for a lot of different audiences. One of the things that's so great about Leopold is that not only was he a great scientist and a great philosopher, but he was a very, very good writer. And so you can find something in Leopold for just about every situation, and you'll find in this film there's a lot of quotes from Leopold read by Peter Coyote, whose voice is Leopold. And the quality of his writing really is just outstanding, I think probably as good as anybody in the whole history of the conservation movement.
In what ways has Leopold's thinking changed the Forest Service or the world for that matter?
Well, Leopold's ideas underpin the current basic management philosophy of the Forest Service. When the Forest Service made this shift in the late 80s and early 90s from multiple use management to ecosystem management, Leopold was expressly invoked by the chief of the Forest Service at that time, saying we need to have more of Leopold's thinking in our management philosophy. His thinking also underpins the Natural Resources Conservation Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So literally millions of acres of public lands are guided by Leopold's thinking.
What do you want the film to inspire in viewers?
The possibility of our ability to change and evolve. We end the film with the idea that the land ethic is not a fixed notion, that it evolves constantly. And so mostly, let me say this. When Leopold was, one thing that most people don't know about him, he was at one time the head of the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce. And he said that the role of the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce is to make people think. You don't often hear that from the Chamber of Commerce, but I think what we want to do is to make people think about their relation, as Beth said, about their relationship to land and their relationships with each other.
How has making the film changed you personally?
Well, I feel enormously privileged. I mean, we were given an opportunity by the Leopold family. Actually, we were sort of had the great opportunity to meet three of Leopold's children, and the trust that they put in us to make this film was enormous. And so we took that responsibility very seriously. And so, you know, we learned a lot in that process. And now, in the process of getting the film out, we have this other responsibility to sort of make sure that people see it and understand it.
With only 17 seconds of Leopold existing, what else does the film consist of?
The important thing about the film is that it's not just about Leopold's life, it's about his current legacy and why his ideas are so critical for our contemporary environmental problems.
So you interview several people?
Yeah, we interviewed about 70 people, and we used about 40 of the interviews in the show. We see people who are living Leopold's land ethic today, and we also hear testimonials from a bunch of very important thinkers about conservation issues.
I've been talking with Steve Dunsky, U.S. Forest Service filmmaker, and Beth Pendleton of the Alaska Regional Forester. Would you know here? Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I would, just really encourage folks to come out this evening and to see and learn for yourself about Aldo Leopold. I've been inspired for years by his writing, and the one thing that I will share that's particularly touched me is this focus around bringing people together, collaboration relative to public land management. And I give him a lot of credit for starting that. We have a ways to go, but his inspiration, I think, through the times have really resulted in some successful efforts in managing and bringing people to the land, particularly young people, and connecting people to the incredible public as well as private lands in this country.
I think that, you know, most people have heard of Henry David Thoreau and John Muir, and not as many people have heard of Aldo Leopold, and I think that he's every bit the thinker and writer and conservationist that they were, and he does deserve to be better known.
Aldo Leopold and a land ethic for a time. Green Fires could be shown tonight at 7 o'clock at the Egan Lecture Hall at the University of Alaska Southeast. Steve Dunsky and Beth Pendleton, thank you very much for coming down the station today.
Our
thank
pleasure.
Thank you.
Mist and mystery. by a parasitic greedhead scam. From Sarawak to Amazonas, Costa Rica to mangy BC hills, cortege rhythm of falling timber. What kind of currency grows in these new deserts, these brand new floodplains?
Juno, KRNN is starting a new live concert series at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater with Colette Costa.
Well, thanks, Scott. It's going to be Wednesday, October 5th at 7 p.m., and you're going to be my co-host for the Windy Ridge Roundup. What is that anyway?
Well, it'll be a night of country-inspired tunes from such Juno luminaries as Andy Ferguson,
Stuart Ely,
Eric Chadwell,
Pat Henry,
Collette Costa,
and Scott Burton,
and more. Go to KRNN.org for more info and tickets.
That's October 5th at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town Theater.
Time is 3:46, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is named Tuffy, and he's calling from Valdez, Alaska. He's working with a circus called the Circus Polynesia, coming to town on Thursday, October 6th. Tuffy, thank you very much for being on the show with me today.
Well, thank you for having me on the air with you.
So this Thursday, October 6th, is the date of the event?
It's actually the 7th.
Which is a Friday.
Right.
And they're performing now in Valdez?
Right now, well, we're performing tomorrow and Sunday in Valdez. Yes. It's our first time in Alaska with the Cirque Polynesian show. And it's like Cirque du Soleil in that it's a modern stage presentation with some circus elements, but more of a Cirque du Soleil style with the beautiful dancers and the warriors and the fire knife dancing and all of these really cool and exciting acts.
Tell me more about the circus, if you could, please.
Well, sure. There's aerialist, a world champion hula hoop artist, the warriors from Samoa, the dancers from Tahiti, the world's funniest clowns. He's a juggler. He's an acrobat. It's 2 hours of family fun and entertainment.
And where can people get tickets?
You can get tickets at Cirque Poly, C-I-R-Q-U-E. P-O-L-Y, CirquePoly.com, or you can just go to the box office 1 hour prior to the show and pick up tickets.
And this is happening where?
At the Sitka...
Centennial Hall?
At the High School Centennial Hall, yes.
Sounds good. And where do tickets run?
In advance, VIP tickets are $30, and general admission tickets are $20. And at the door, they'll be $35 and $25. So you can save $5 by going online to get them.
How did Cirque Polynesia start?
We started with a show in Hawaii called Cirque Hawaii in Honolulu about 8 years ago. And then we moved to Maui, and we created a new show called Cirque Polynesia. And then we have a show in Santa Cruz, California, another Cirque Polynesia show. And right now we have a show, well, it just closed and the performers came here, but over the summer in Atlantic City, New Jersey at a casino. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of good footage on our website showing the artist and the incredible show that it is.
So this is like a regular circus? Is it going to have cotton candy and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah, we're going to, well, not in Sitka. The theater won't allow any food or beverage inside, but we'll have the toys and the face painting, the photo ops with the performers, and the merchandise, but no cotton candy at this circus.
All right, Tuffy, if people need more information, you want to give us that website one more time, please?
Yes, thank you. It's CirquePoly.com. That's CirquePoly.com.
All right, Tuffy, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Thank you for having me, and we'll see you soon.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 30th of September, 2011. It was on this day in 1452 the first section of the Gutenberg Bible was finished in Mainz, Germany, by Johannes Gutenberg. In ancient times, books had been written on scrolls by monks by hand, working with pen and ink, copying manuscripts one page at a time. Gutenberg's genius was to celebrate each element of script into its basic components, lowercase, capital letters, punctuation, to form words, lines, full pages of text. And he also invented a printing press to use his type. He had the movable type printing press in operation by 1450, and of this first edition of the Gutenberg Bible, he probably produced about 180 copies. Only 4 dozen Gutenberg Bibles remain, and of these, only 21 are complete. It was on this day in 1791, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's two-act opera, The Magic Flute, premiered at the Freihaus Theater in Vienna. He wrote the opera with the theater's director, an old family friend, Emanuel Schikaneder, who adapted some German fairy tales, incorporated Masonic elements and references. A few weeks before the opening performance, Mozart fell ill, but worked through September, revising, finishing the opera, even conducted the orchestra on the opening night. It was an immediate success, and though Mozart was sick, he went almost nightly with friends and relatives to see it. It's generally thought that Mozart was suffering from rheumatic fever. It got worse. He was bedridden by November. He was depressed. In his final days, he was trying to finish as much of the Requiem as was possible. And on the evening of December 4th, his last night alive on earth, he whispered for his wife to be quiet, because just then, he told her, across town in the opera house, the Queen of the Night was singing her famous aria. And today's the birthday of Truman Capote, born in New Orleans, 1924. His parents divorced when he was just 4 years old. He was sent to live in Alabama with some elderly aunts. When he was around 12 years old, the principal at Capote School told the family the boy was subnormal and he ought to be sent to a special school. So they sent him to a psychiatric study clinic at a university in the East, where they tested his IQ and declared that he was a genius. And it was around that time that the boy started writing in earnest. The boy who would go on to get a job at the New Yorker magazine when he was 17, to write Breakfast at Tiffany's and In Cold Blood. Truman Capote, who wrote, "Work is the only device I know of for improving one's technique. Writing has laws of perspective, of light and shade, just as painting does or music. If you are born knowing them, fine. If not, learn them. Then rearrange the rules to suit yourself." Here's a poem for today by Glynn Maxwell, A Child's Wedding Song. Thumb and finger make a ring to see the future through. I can see the world through it, only the world and you. Only the world and you alone. If I should break this ring, where will I find you in the world, though I find everything? A Child's Wedding Song by Glynn Maxwell, from 1,000 Nights and Counting, Selected Poems, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Priscilla Kinter. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving caramel apple sundaes and parfaits. McDonald's is open daily in the valley on Trout Street.
Time is 3:45 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Reminding you that the Saturday hike for tomorrow is the John Muir Cabin. The group will decide the length and the final destination. You should wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots with ice grippers for slippery boardwalks and warm layers of clothing. Bring plenty of food and water. Meet at the Spaulding Meadows Trailhead at 12.6-mile Glacier Highway at 9:30 in the morning. Carpooling is strongly recommended. No dogs or firearms, please, and have a great hike. And if you're looking for something to do tonight, Northwest singer-songwriter Tracy Spring is performing at 7 o'clock at the Rookery. Admission is by donation. Here's a sample of her music now.
Goodbye, I am tired.
Spring, she'll be performing tonight at 7 o'clock at the Rookery in downtown Juneau. If you need more information on that, give us a call here at KTOO at 586-1212. Here's some music that's happening tomorrow night.
It's fall, and Gold Street Music is back with a concert on Saturday, October 1st at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. The performers are Eric McDowell, Dean Frank, The Hen House, that's Lizzie Elkins and Wendy Gervin, Joe Emerson, and Irene Muller. That's Gold Street Music on Saturday, October 1st at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets at the door.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am a leader.
Volunteer.
I give back to my community.
Walter, I am Vincent Ray.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
Here's my story.
Here are stories.
Oh, yes, buddy! Ooh.
Natasha Worker is 18 years old, and she's a recent West Valley High School graduate. Here, this Fairbanks teen works with a special needs rider at Helping Hooves, a horseback riding therapy program. Natasha is a dedicated volunteer here. For 4 years now, she's worked with riders on Tuesday afternoons during the warmer months. Natasha got involved because she's active in a local 4-H group, but she's stayed because she says it means a lot to her when she helps someone.
Oh, no!
Helping Hooves serves people of all ages who have physical and developmental challenges. Natasha mainly works with the little kids.
Some of the younger kids
if they get to interact with an animal, and they just have, like, they can build a bond, and it helps them, like, with balance if they have walking issues, or they can just express themselves in another way.
Beth Austin is one of Natasha's adult 4-H leaders.
She's there the whole time, you know, from start to finish. If I need her to step in and assist with a different rider that she doesn't typically work with because maybe somebody else is out of town or whatnot, she's very good about that, interactive with the kids, and, you know, I think really enjoys the reward and also the challenge of working with people that have special needs.
Natasha will attend UAF this year and plans to keep giving her time to the kids, the horses, and the Helping Hooves program. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
I am a teenager.
I am an Alaskan. I give back.
Do you see me? Recognize youth ages 12 to 19 at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Behavioral Health.
Perseverance Theater season opens with Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps. This Tony Award-winning comedy features four actors playing dozens and dozens and dozens of colorful characters. Part mystery, part romance, and all laughs. You'll love this take on Hitchcock's classic. The 39 Steps runs September 23rd through October 16th. For more information, visit perseverancetheater.org or call 463-TIXS. Play big at Perseverance Theater.
It's from a brand new CD called Inspiration by the Viva Girls. Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarsuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also live online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up next Monday on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Mandy O'Neill Cole from AWARE about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Claire Murphy will be here to remind us about next Wednesday's Walk to School Day. Find out about activities happening during next week's National Mental Health Awareness Week. And Addison Fields from the City Museum will be here to highlight next Friday's First Friday on recent acquisitions. Also talk about chainsaws and outboard motors. Also the Writer's Almanac Bird Note Music and More next Monday on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, scattered rain showers in the evening with areas of fog and rain likely later on. Low temperatures around 40 degrees. Forecast for Saturday looks like rain is likely with high temperatures around 51 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 33 degrees. And the forecast for Sunday looks like sunny weather with high temperatures around 53 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a great weekend.